Live from the WTAD studios in the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, it's time to pull up a chair and assemble today's WTAD News Roundtable.
Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the News Roundtable. Tonight's the night, the final Democrat debates before the Hawkeye Caucus, and we're finally to a place where we had talked about earlier this year, where the group has been whittled down to something a little bit more manageable on stage, instead of having a dozen people up there trying to get any type of soundbite they can get, or any question put in their direction, and then trying to get somebody's attention so that they could retort back. Tonight, you've got your four who are legitimate front runners, all within not far of the margin of error in Iowa polling, and then your two further behind in Amy Klobuchar and Tom Steyer. So they are at a place in this final debate where there's nothing left to lose. So it's time to push all in if you're them, which creates an interesting dynamic tonight, backed up by what you heard at the top of the hour on Fox News, the backbiting between Sanders and Warren that didn't just start yesterday. It's actually been going on kind of behind the scenes. So we'll get into what's going on with these candidates in front of the final Democrat debate before the Iowa caucus coming up February 3rd on the back half of today's show. I'm joined in studio by Steve Ball, pressing the buttons, taking notes, and from the WTAD newsroom, say good morning to Scott Hardy.
Good morning, Quaid. Good morning, everybody. Former State Senator John Sullivan of Rushville has resigned as head of the Illinois Department of Agriculture after being asked to do so by Governor J.B. Pritzker. In a Monday statement, Pritzker said he accepted the resignation over the weekend. A statement said that Pritzker asked for the resignation from Sullivan because Pritzker is, quote, disturbed, quote, that then-Senator Sullivan knew of the July 31st, 2012 email sent to Quincy native and former state representative and lobbyist Mike McClain shortly after it was sent. He was forwarded a copy of that email. That email was first sent to staff members of then-Governor Pat Quinn, and in it, McClain alluded to a rape in Champaign that had been covered up and other irregularities that a state worker had kept quiet about. Pritzker went on to say that Sullivan, quote, did not handle it appropriately, including not alerting the inspector general or other authorities, end quote. Sullivan was named to head the Ag Department by Pritzker just after the Chicago billionaire won election in November 2018. Pritzker says his administration has passed on all the information Sullivan shared with them to the inspector general's office, and that his office will continue to assist in the ongoing investigation. In a statement later Monday, Sullivan said that he did not read the email thoroughly at the time, but said, quote, I accept responsibility for what was truly an unintentional oversight and the subsequent inaction, end quote. Quincy City Council has approved hiring a Springfield, Illinois firm to propose how the city will proceed with repairing the wastewater treatment plant. The council last night approved a $500,000 proposal from Crawford, Murphy & Tilley for engineering design services for improvements to the wastewater treatment plant. City engineer Jeff Conte says that the plan to replace clarifiers that don't work and digestion equipment is underway. Conte says that making some changes in how the plant handles sewage, including taking out the clarifiers, the city will save money.
By removing that before it hits the biological treatment process, it reduces our energy expense because the bacteria that eat the organics require lots of oxygen in order to blow a lot of air into the water. So by taking it out before it gets to the aeration basin, that will save us some money.
Conte says that CMT will examine how best the city can reduce its cost and adjust the repairs based on the possible savings. Conte adds the city has several options.
They all have obviously different costs. We want to balance out our initial investment costs with the proposed or with the projected savings. So, you know, the projects could be as little as $2 million, could be as much as $7 million. That cost is going to be driven by a potential savings on the energy side and on the disposal side. If we're looking at save up to $500,000, it would make sense to spend $7 million. You know, if we're only looking at saving $100,000, then, you know, investment is more along line of about $2 million.
Cost of the study and the repairs are covered under last year's rate hike. Conte says that the city should get the results of the design study by June, and that any construction won't begin until 2021. Section of Quincy will now qualify for grant money generated by tax dollars from the sale of adult-use cannabis in Illinois. The Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority Monday announced areas across the state that are eligible for Restore, Reinvest, and Renew, or R3 program grant funding. That includes all of Quincy west of 8th Street and a section east of 8th to 12th from York to Spring, and a separate area east from 8th to 12th between Locust and Cook's Lane. It's an area that was already identified by the Pritzker administration as a disproportionately impacted area for social equity license applicants. The authority says that 25% of the tax revenue from cannabis sales will be used for the R3 program grants, which will be distributed using a competitive process. The authority says it will award grant funds to community organizations that support economic development, provide violence prevention and reentry services, and offer youth development and civil legal aid to individuals in the eligible areas. A notice of funding opportunity for the grants will be released in the next few months. More details are coming out about decisions made recently by the Hannibal Board of Public Works. That's after three investigations last year and what the board calls a misuse of funds investigation. Our news gathering partners at KHQA-TV, after a Missouri Sunshine Law request, discovered that the cost for investigations into the board had reached over $88,000, but newly obtained documents reveal that the law firm of St. Louis, Jackson Lewis, charged the Board of Public Works at least $29,000. The investigation started last summer after the utility's general manager resigned. According to meeting minutes from a closed meeting in mid-August of last year, the board unanimously moved to appoint board member Stephen Frank to oversee an outside consultant for a forensic audit. Meeting minutes show that no record of board members discussing possible firms before or after that vote. Also, the full board then voted to ratify the contract as presented 5 days after Frank signed it. KHQA asked the Board of Public Works if a contract shouldn't have been signed before the full board voted on it. The board responded saying that the city wasn't bound by the contract until it was ratified by a full board vote, saying, quote, the contract language speaks for itself and Mr. Frank was given proper authority to execute the contract with the understanding that the contract would not be ratified until after a full board vote. Quincy man crashed his pickup into another pickup and then into a tree last night. According to Adams County Sheriff's deputies, 46-year-old Timothy Smith of Quincy was south on Highway 57 going through Marblehead around 11 o'clock last night. According to the sheriff's deputies, Smith was driving recklessly and hit a pickup driven by a Mendon woman, 51-year-old Rebecca Nutt. She wasn't hurt. Smith drove on, eventually crashed south of Marblehead into a tree. He was taken to Blessing Hospital. Smith's been ticketed for DUI, reckless driving, speeding, and not having insurance. That's a look at the latest in local news. Of course, we'll have much more for you, including the resumption of jury selection and a couple of murder trials throughout the area. That and a lot more right here on WTAD.com and on our social media pages, including both Twitter and Facebook.
Forgive me if I missed this, but are there groups or has the city got a committee put together for plans for the spending of the adult-use marijuana grants? In the story, did I miss that? Is there already a committee or groups that are putting together plans for the grant money?
Oh, you mean the state?
The state, well, but
from the state
is so the state's going to decide how to spend that money here locally.
Well, they're going to take applications here in the next few months. So it's just going to be from like private groups or semi-private or public groups who want to apply for the money.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Right,
are there groups? So. When's their deadline for coming up with that?
They haven't set a deadline. They just made it available yesterday. So I believe probably through, if you get it done by the end of February, you should be in good shape. So
okay. All right. I'm just curious. Thank you, sir. 10:16, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, the final Democrat debate tonight in front of the Hawkeye Caucus. You've got four co-leaders and two tailing behind, which gives them not a lot to lose on the stage tonight. So we'll get into what possibly to look for in the Democrat debate tonight, next on the News Roundtable.
WTAD.
So I see you've taken my comments to heart, sir.
Mixed it up.
Not from the regular cluster of bumper music in the rotation. This would be Dave Grohl and Foo Fighters.
Right.
So we're doing Dave Grohl's birthday today?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, and obviously neither one of you are going to say he's over 70.
He's not over 70.
No, he's not.
So we'll say, let's play, is he over 50? I think the answer is yes. He is over 50. Maybe he's 50. Is he 52?
That's also my guess.
He's got to be one of the youngest members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's only 51.
51.
Yeah.
He was a young man behind that drum kit.
Yeah.
With Nirvana, if you remember.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Very young gentleman at that time.
I was on my honeymoon when Kurt Cobain died, so I remember all of that. Yeah.
I was at school. I was in the middle of taking classes, so that was a big point of topic for our faux air sessions that day. That was an odd time in St. Louis media with big stuff going on, but that's a completely different conversation for a different day and a different audience. Good morning. Welcome back to the News Roundtable. Talk Radio 930 WTAD at 10:20. Tonight, you've got the final Democrat debates before the Iowa caucuses coming up February 3rd. We started with over a couple of dozen candidates, and tonight we'll have six on the stage, four who are essentially the big four right now. If you look at polling in Iowa, all of them are pretty well clumped together, not far from within the plus or minus degree of accuracy. So you've got four people who could come out on top, who could finish fourth, which isn't where you want to finish in Iowa, especially if you feel like you're this close. And then you've got the two on the outside who are still trying to find that place for themselves, or perhaps they have, and this will just solidify that. I think the party itself, the Democrat Party, would like to see a solid statesman emerge. If you look at President Trump and how he goes about things in a very unconventional manner at the White House, a solid statesman would be the anti-Trump, the opposite of Trump. And I think that's what the Democrat Party would like to see. I'm not sure that they've got that carved image from any of the final six who are going to be on the stage. And you have some issues, as you heard at the top of the hour on Fox News, where you've got some of these candidates getting after each other. Now, this happens in primaries, but in the past, there have been situations where people have agreed. They've had the, you know, gentlemen's candidates agreements to not get after each other, but it seems that that's been put aside, especially between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren over the last several days. And they are two of the four Democrats who are in that 5 percentage point window in a recent Des Moines Register poll. So you've got issues between candidates. You had Bernie Sanders criticizing Joe Biden for his votes on the Iraq war, and also issues of Social Security and bankruptcy protections. It'll be interesting if that gets brought up tonight. Now, Bernie doesn't need to be invited by the hosts or the panel to bring that up. He can do it all on his own. Apparently, there's a script out there with Sanders that Sanders campaign has produced for volunteers confronting supporters not only of Biden, but also of Elizabeth Warren and Buttigieg, which would kind of seem like the gloves are off for Bernie. Now, you'll remember 4 years ago, Bernie was in a position to win Iowa and ended up losing it on a whole bunch of coin flips at the end. Which, if you're Bernie, you're like, how do I lose that many coin flips in a row? I'm not really sure. But the circumstances 4 years ago were, you know, the Clintons were floating the DNC at the time, and we all kind of knew, if the people are kind of paying your way, are you going to let them lose? And that played out. And I think there are still some people who are staunch supporters of Bernie who are hanging on to that. I don't know that Clinton will be referred to tonight in the debate, but there are Bernie devotees who still have that in their list of grievances. And I would say justifiably so. But you have Warren in a situation where the last debate in December with the wine cave comment towards Buttigieg, which I think actually hurt him because he was at his highest point polling-wise about a month ago. And since the whole wine cave thing, he's kind of trended down a little bit. And then you had the situation where she accused Bernie of telling her privately, between the two of them, just a conversation between the two of them, that she didn't think a woman could win. And I find that an interesting thing because it's unprovable one way or the other. It's a he said, she said situation. So she says he said this, he said he did not. Will that get revisited? I think because it's the most recent thing, it will. If not by them, then by the panel in front of them tonight. Now, how they handle that question, I think they'll get it right out of the gate, will be interesting. Will Warren back off and kind of say, I don't want to talk about that. That's not where I want to go, which I don't know is the case. Why bring it up in the first place then? But will Sanders go after her and say, why did you say it? You know it's not true. That could be an interesting exchange, especially considering that ideologically, those two are the closest together on the stage. And I think a lot of the people who support one or the other would be fine if they were a ticket. However, if they butt heads hard enough tonight, putting them together as a ticket doesn't seem very likely. You had the Sanders campaign talking points that Warren is the candidate of the elite. If you're in Iowa getting phone calls, perhaps you've heard that. So I think that, and that flies in the face of wine caves. Of course, Pete Buttigieg's response to that was, I'm literally the only one here on stage who's not a millionaire or a billionaire. But will Warren call Bernie a sexist tonight on stage? That would be a moment. I don't know that it's the moment she's looking for. But perhaps in this situation, it's one she will get after because viability is something that is in Warren is on Warren's radar. Timothy Carney put out a piece yesterday saying that Warren is desperate and it's viability that she's concerned about. And it's because of the way the caucuses are constructed. He points out that Warren's statewide average right now is 16%. If she got 16% statewide, there would be precincts, maybe half of them, he says, where she would not be technically viable. You need to get above a 15% threshold to be viable in the caucus for delegates. So if she doesn't reach that threshold, then she doesn't get delegates, depending upon that percentage in any given area. So in other words, if she finishes fourth, as Carney says, she could end up looking, it look like a distant fourth place, with her closer to fifth place like Amy Klobuchar, and further behind Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden. And it could knock her out of the race. Hence why Carney says she's desperate, and perhaps why the whole Bernie doesn't think a woman can win comment popping up yesterday. Again, none of these things point towards the statesman that I think the Democrat Party is wanting to rally around. Interestingly, a lot of people still seem to think that Joe Biden is heads above the rest of the candidates when you look at a national poll, but that's not how this works. It starts with Iowa, and I don't know that Biden is clearly above anybody in Iowa. You have that four-horse race right now, and depending upon how the caucus works, and that even is a swing back and forth while it's going on. After you follow that up with New Hampshire, right by Bernie's home state. That's an interesting thing. And then you've got Bloomberg pouring tons of money into South Carolina and Super Tuesday states. I don't know if Biden doesn't show well in Iowa and then doesn't jump up in New Hampshire, does he have any momentum heading into Super Tuesday? So I think even though people are like, he's still the most solid guy, he's the one we have the least concerns about, he still could likely say something tonight. There's a fair chance that he could say something tonight that makes everybody say, what did Joe just say? And it won't help him in Iowa. And then his trend towards heading to New Hampshire won't be where they want it to be. It's an interesting time for the Democrat Party and their candidates. And if you're Amy Klobuchar or Tom Steyer, who I think is just happy to be on stage, how do you make space for yourself with all the attention being on those four candidates? It all gets underway later tonight. Will they focus on President Trump, or will they focus on each other? Stay tuned. That is the Tuesday edition of the News Roundtable. We'll be back in tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. You should be here, too.
The News Roundtable will reconvene tomorrow morning at 10:06 a.m. on AM 930 WTAD. Podcast available online at WTAD.com.